I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to another Wisconsin Forward podcast here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Today, we're going to be talking about the role of right-wing radio. Over the last 30 years, right-wing talk has dominated the airwaves. The Telecommunications Act of 1996 allowed companies to own multiple radio stations and newspapers in each local community, and the industry soon consolidated, with Clear Channel owning 900 stations or more. With the rise of Rush Limbaugh, conservative talk ruled the roost, with many imitators, including Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly, nationally. Here in Wisconsin, the radio dial tilted conservative too, with Charlie Sykes and then Mark Belling and Vicki McKenna leading the way, especially in southeastern Wisconsin. To discuss the role that right-wing radio has played in our state, I'll be speaking with Jane Matinair of Matinair on Air, Earl Ingram of The Earl Ingram Show, Lou Friedland, a professor of journalism and mass communications at UW-Madison, and Sage Weil, the CEO of Civic Media. I hope you'll enjoy this conversation.
Hi, I'm Jane Matinair, host of Matinair on Air, 10 a.m. to noon on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Let me ask you, you've been in radio a long time.
I have.
And right-wing radio, talk radio here in the Milwaukee area, played a big role in Wisconsin's politics. Do you want to talk about that?
Right-wing talk radio became purely the purview of the right because, at least in my estimation, the left did not see that as a threat. And there are also other things you have to remember, that what happened to the radio industry over the course of the decades. So they got rid of the fairness doctrine in the mid-80s. In the mid-90s, they got rid of the rule that limited ownership for any one company of the number of media properties they could own in any one community. So when they allowed these companies to start buying up not only the newspaper, but the television station, and I'm going to buy two radio stations, and the whole logic behind that was this was going to make media and radio so much better, Matt, because you'd have all of these little stations that could now do reggae, you know, and they wouldn't have to play top 40 music or rock and roll music or, you know, there's just going to be so much more freedom. That is not what happened even remotely. The only people this deregulation did good things for were the people who were buying up radio stations and then consolidating everything and getting rid of half of the staff and running three stations now with a staff of one. So that whole premise that this was going to bring more opinions and more views did not happen. And like I said, I think the left was lazy about appreciating the impact that this was going to have, especially when Rush Limbaugh, who is probably the standard bearer for this, I think when he started, he sold himself more as an entertainer as opposed to a serious political commentator. That changed. As he got more powerful, he used that as a much bigger bludgeon and, in my estimation, led the way to the coarse discourse that we have now among people who are elected officials. Rush Limbaugh is the one who, I believe it was called Sandra Fluke, a slut because she wanted to have birth control. So this kind of paved the way for that kind of rhetoric and that kind of hateful framing of the other. And again, us othering each other only helps them.
And while you were in radio at the time, it must have been kind of horrifying for you to hear what was coming out.
Well, I was in music radio, but the equivalent for music radio were shock jocks and on rock stations. And they would say the most vile, revolting sexual jokes. And that was big in the 80s. And then Howard Stern, of course, became the standard bearer for that. I have never listened to Howard Stern. I've been told many times, oh, he's changed and it's much better. And I, okay, that's fine. That was never my cup of tea. That was never my kind of humor.
I heard him when he was getting going in 1980, 1981, 1982, when I was living in D.C. And it was just unbelievable, the stuff he was able to say on the radio. And then politically here in Wisconsin, right-wing talk radio, Charlie Sykes et al., what role did they play?
It was massive. It really was massive. And I have to give credit where credit is due, because some of those hosts did a remarkable job of taking facts, turning them completely around and upside down, and ending up blaming the Democrat and not the Republican. It was a really impressive feat to watch some of these guys turn everything upside down and inside out so that their guy came off looking good and the other person was the demon. It was really something to witness. I'm not quite sure I would ever be that mentally flexible, so I guess I have to give credit where credit is due. But there were lots of falsehoods and lies and smears that then became just accepted as truth, especially because I listen to this guy and I trust him.
And the repetition, the force of repetition.
Over and over, the pounding of the messages. Keep it short. Keep it simple. Repeat it over and over. Joseph Goebbels was the one who said that about propaganda. And that's what we're still living with today.
Mm-hmm. And is it liberating for you to be on civic media and be able to speak your mind in a way that maybe you couldn't before?
I cannot tell you how grateful I am for this opportunity. Seriously. Like you said, I've been in this business for 4 decades. Most of it was in music radio. But even then, I was never overtly political. I certainly had a lot of opinions, which was going to be not a shock to anyone who's ever worked with me for any length of time. But that wasn't my role at that time. So I do find it immensely freeing to be able to say what I think and hopefully to get people to think and laugh and learn at the same time. I don't believe in lecturing people to get them to my side. I don't think that's effective. I want us to like each other, and I want us to learn things together, and then I want us to appreciate things together. And once we have a little bit of that back and forth going, then we can talk about harder things and hopefully come to some place in the middle, because I don't believe everyone is always right or always wrong.
So now let's get the perspective of Earl Ingram, the host of the Earl Ingram Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
What role did right-wing radio, Charlie Sykes, and all those guys play politically here in Wisconsin?
You know, every time I see Charlie Sykes today, you know, I remember when Charlie Sykes was first leaving, and I called in the last day he was there. He says, "Oh, it's Earl." You know, I said, "Well, you know, Charlie, I remember you and Mark Billing, Northridge, if you know anything about Milwaukee, was a viable place, and it was an anchor. And there were businesses everywhere. It was a very viable middle-class community, and Northridge was the anchor. And a guy named Jesse Anderson, a white guy, killed his wife, and he blamed it on black guys. I don't know if you remember the story. And he got on the airway, him and Mark Billing, and denigrated Northridge and told people, it's unsafe, don't go there. Northridge died. The business community in a vibrant city like Northridge, strong middle class, brown deer neighborhood, died. And I remember saying to Charlie Sykes on the day that he was getting ready to leave, you know, you helped destroy a vibrant community, a vibrant neighborhood. I remember telling Mark Billing the exact same thing. They tried to weasel out of it, but they had that kind of influence and that kind of power, and they use, you know, racial overtones to gain their popularity. Well, it's easy to do that when, again, the racial makeup is 95% to 5%. And so when there aren't enough black people to go around in the state of Wisconsin for people to get to know one, right? I mean, so they go by what they hear. And there are people, unfortunately, in this society who make money off of those kinds of things.
Did they pave the way for Walker and Trump the first time around?
I'm glad you asked that question. They're the reason Scott Walker got elected. Mark Belling and Charlie Sykes and Vicki McKenna, and Jay Weber. They took a guy who, again, didn't have a college degree. And that guy ran for president of the United States without a college degree. Only in America. You know, Poor black guy can't get a job somewhere. He walks in with a college degree. But Scott Walker didn't have to have any of those things. When they started building up Scott Walker, they knew who Scott Walker was from the time he was a state representative. He had already shown his mettle that he was willing to be the guy who would stand up in the face of truth and give falsehoods. They are the ones who gave Scott Walker the foundation to be who he was. They're the guys who even pushed him to run for president, even though clearly he was in it over his head, but they convinced him that he could do it.
Here's Lou Friedland, emeritus professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Lou, it's great to have you on the podcast. You've studied how people in Wisconsin arrive at their views on political issues, or how those views get reinforced anyway. What did you find?
Well, that's a good question. We spent about 12 years, Matt, trying to figure this out, starting around 2010, 2011. And we ran what turns out to be the longest running, deepest political communication research project in the country that we're aware of. And so, not surprisingly, Wisconsin is a complicated state. It's not simple. And people live different lives in different parts of the state. They have different concerns, as you and most of our listeners know. Some people are super rural. Some people live in small towns. Some people live in cities, small cities and large cities. And so where you live makes a big difference. That's one thing that we learned. It's not a shock, but it has more political nuance than we would think. And also what we overly pretentiously call the media ecologies that people inhabit, the media worlds that they live in, again, not super surprisingly, make a big difference in how they understand the world and particularly politics.
But it's not just that they are feeding from one national camp. Everyone on the right is watching Fox and that's all they're getting their news from. Or everyone on the left is watching MSNBC and that's all they're getting. It was a more complicated picture that you found.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, you know, that's one of the most interesting parts of the research that we've done for our book Battleground. People have different mixes, again, not surprisingly. There are Fox News viewers who live primarily in Fox world. Not surprisingly, those are the hardcore MAGA folks in our state. There's a decent number of people, and I think people on the left don't really believe this, but there's a decent number of people, non-trivial, who watch Fox News pretty regularly. That's probably their primary source, but they also go to CNN. Sometimes they more rarely go to MSNBC, but mostly CNN. They look for other mainstream news sources, and they try to balance what they hear on Fox with other places. Now, they're influenced by Fox. They're pulled in that direction, but they're not necessarily living in Fox world. And that's a critical, critical point for everybody to understand. Both sides seem to feel like the other side lives in their own small media bubble, and they really don't see the other side. That's definitely true it's more true on the right than it is on the left, but it's definitely less true than most people think it is. Most people have mixed media diets, and our evidence shows that the more mixed your media diet is, the more likely you are to be open to some kind of persuasion, or at least openness to other views than your own.
Because I think the misconception is that, you know, you're in one world, I'm in another, and you don't have a passport to even get to the other world. And that's not what you found, really,
people. No, that's not. Most people, and this is one of the most interesting things, too, that we found, that people who are on the center left even, surprised, they tend to live in Madison or Milwaukee, the further left you are. Those are the people who have actually less contact with people unlike themselves than people in the center right, and certainly even the right, because when you live in a small city, a Wausau, Green Bay, Eau Claire, you live in a different world. You have a dentist who might be a Republican, right? You go to school with people whose kids aren't completely segregated in the progressive west or east side of town, like maybe people are in Madison. So in fact, people in medium cities, small cities, and even towns have more mixed media diets. And again, the more mixed your networks are and the more mixed your media diets are, the more, I would say, moderate, or at least by which I mean open to other points of view and persuasion you are.
And you found in your study that, you know, individual social ties are really important too. It's not just what they are consuming from Fox or right-wing radio, for instance. It depends on what their friends think also.
Absolutely. And in fact, I would almost flip it. And I think that this is what another thing that people don't understand. Our social networks, not in the Facebook sense, but our real social networks, the people we actually hang out with, work with, kids go to school with, other parents, clubs, etc. Those are much more determinative of what we know about the world, including our media diets, than our media diets alone. And most people, again, outside of some pockets of large cities, most people spend some time with people who aren't like themselves. The more exposed you are to people who aren't like yourselves, the more moderate you're likely to be and more open to other views.
Tell me about the role of right-wing talk radio in Wisconsin that you've studied.
Oh, wow. How much time do we have? Right-wing talk radio in Wisconsin is a unique phenomenon nationally, and here's why, Matt. Of course, all across the country, Rush Limbaugh was on 2-3 hours, 4 hours a day, and ever since the late 80s, so that's not new. And then Hannity and others came along. So we had national right-wing talk radio on AM stations around the country, and you could find that in pretty much any state in the union. Two things were different in Wisconsin. One was that we had extremely smart and articulate, right-wing talk show host, Charlie Sykes, who, of course, is now a never-Trumper. But at the time, in the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, Charlie Sykes was a very strong Republican, and he is extremely smart, extremely good on the radio, extremely persuasive. And Charlie didn't like Democrats, and he had a grudge, and he grounded every single day on the most powerful AM station, WTMJ, in the state of Wisconsin. And that created a context within Wisconsin for more extreme right-wing views to shift down and become anchored at the state level. And that made a big difference. And of course, he had his, I would say, wannabe Mark Belling, who's kind of a more of a ranter than Charlie is, but on the second most powerful AM station in the state. And then the other thing that you had in Wisconsin and still do, a friend of mine's doing some work on this now, it's not published yet, is you had local talk show hosts in every decent size community across the state of any size at all, right? Pretty much blanketing the state. And so you had a kind of three layers of right-wing talk radio in Wisconsin. The national layer that everyone else had, Limbaugh, Hannity, and so on. Then you had extremely smart state layers on for 2-3 hours a day because TMJ, of course, and Belling to a much lesser extent, was rebroadcast throughout the state. And then you had local folks coming on and forming those local bonds as local conservative talk show hosts who would then further reinforce the message as usually taking the tone that was set by Charlie Sykes or, again, lesser extent, Belling.
And Charlie Sykes was instrumental in paving the way for Scott Walker to become governor.
Oh, absolutely. I would go so far as to say it's a, you know, speculative proposition, but no Charlie Sykes, no Scott Walker as governor. People don't remember, but in the early days, Charlie had Walker on his show 2-3 times a week when Walker was county executive of Milwaukee. Scott, first of all, learned his communication chops on Charlie's show. But more importantly, this is something we found in some of our earlier research. There was a virtuous, not politically virtuous, but a virtuous cycle of Walker coming on Charlie's show, testing out messages, seeing what stuck, then that went into the early social media sphere. You could then further see what stuck. If the message didn't work, then it was dropped. And if it did work, then it was developed and amplified over time, both by Charlie and by Walker himself. So there was a symbiotic relationship between the two. Although, honestly, I think Charlie was guiding Walker from a communication standpoint more than the other way around.
And these right-wing stations are so dominant in Wisconsin, there was no competition politically against them. There was Air America briefly, which was a national thing that didn't work. Crudy's Devil's Advocates started when Walker came on. Walker already was on the scene.
Right.
But really, the equation or the proportion of right-wing political talk versus anything close to liberal talk was something like what, 95-1 or something?
Yeah, I would say it's probably more than that. It's hard to measure because the left-wing or the progressive talk, that's speaking to a small, relatively small, already convinced audience. But really you're talking about largely a Madison, Dane County and surrounding phenomena, and you're mostly preaching to the converted. And that's true for right-wing talk radio too, but right-wing talk radio cast its net over the entire state. So it was a much bigger door and a much more open door.
And once you were driving around Wisconsin, as I did regularly when I was at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, and you're scanning the dial, there's nothing out there.
You're not picking up Air America out in, you know, in the Chequamegon National Forest area or wherever, you know, you're picking up. But you can certainly find some national talker or TMJ signal or some local right-wing talker. Absolutely.
Or right-wing religious talk, I mean, because that's out there as well.
Absolutely.
And that was all
a whole other, and that's an important point. That also is a whole other anchor of the dial on the lower end of the FM spectrum. So absolutely.
Yeah, and reinforcing the right-wing messaging in its own way. One thing that you found in your study, Lou Friedland, was the fact that newspapers were declining, which has been studied six ways to Sunday. What impact do you think that has had?
Well, I think it's devastating. It's been devastating, Matt. I've been studying this since the 90s. I saw the beginning of the decline of newspapers back in the early 90s. In fact, my earlier academic career was basically focused on what can we do to begin to save newspapers back in 1995.
Right? Yeah, you and Robert McChesney were all over this.
Yeah, and I don't think we can understate the devastating effect of the decline of newspapers on Wisconsin or American civic life more generally. Local, and Wisconsin especially, more than most states, had an extremely robust, you know, not just medium-sized cities like Janesville had an independent, strong newspaper, but, you know, there was one in Baraboo, there was one in Monroe, there's one in, you know, almost every small town of any size in Wisconsin had an independent newspaper. And of course, starting in the early 2000s, but accelerating rapidly throughout the next decade, the Green Bay Press Gazette, the Oshkosh Northwestern, independent papers, good papers. The Press Gazette had the dean of the Wisconsin Press Corps in the Wisconsin Capitol for years and years and years. And those papers were all bought up by Gannett. And what did Gannett do? It just began a process of bluntly strip mining them and, quote, consolidating them, and doing that in a way that basically shrunk their reporting staff, shrunk their local reporting. Think about it. When's the last time you remember seeing an in-depth story on what your local state assembly person or your local state senator was doing? I'm guessing that for most people, it's back to the early 2000s, other than some major scandal or some giant bill. But really, you know, who are our local legislators? Nobody knows. And the reason they don't know, among other things, is because newspapers no longer cover them. So the death of newspapers, and I think we can really say close to the death, maybe they're on life support, the Journal Sentinel, a few others, State Journal. The slow death of newspapers in Wisconsin is as responsible as anything else for the right-wing turn in our state. And of course, it's like that across the United States.
Lou Friedland, tell me about this experiment that we're running here at Civic Media with 20 stations around the state offering a different kind of radio. What do you make of it?
Oh, I think the civic media experiment is one of the most important in the United States right now. I really mean that from my standpoint as a researcher. This is the only state in the United States where there is a statewide network dedicated to news and information from a center or center left point of view, but not skewing it, not biased, trying to reach out to people who are all across the political spectrum, trying to do local content and local news whenever it's possible. It's a huge lift. I don't think that can be understated. I mean, putting 20 stations on the air and programming them in a year and a half basically is nearly unimaginable, unbelievable. And it wasn't like the civic media owners just came in and bought these groups turnkey. You had to put it together. You had to build it. So it's an amazing experiment. It's being watched around the United States. I'm hoping Wisconsin listeners will listen and Wisconsin advertisers will advertise, because they need to understand this civic media is a unique institution in the United States. It's a unique experiment.
Now I'm joined by Sage Weil, the CEO of Civic Media. First of all, Sage, congratulations on the success of Civic Media so far.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
I've been talking with folks from Civic Media about the role that right-wing media has played in Wisconsin. Civic Media isn't exactly a reverse of that. It's not the mirror image on the other side. You're trying to do not only countering right-wing media, you're doing something bigger than that or slightly different than that. I wanted you to explain what you're trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the interesting thing about right-wing media is it's problematic because it is a huge distribution channel for misinformation and disinformation. And it tends to play to people's anger and anxieties and frustrations, right? It's like, it's trying to get people riled up because that's what drives engagement. That's what gets people to listen and get people angry. And it isn't necessarily a positive influence in the political discourse, but it does drive engagement and it's profitable. Rush Limbaugh was a capitalist. He wasn't so much a political ideologue, but he understood how to keep his audience engaged and then make a lot of money doing that. And he was pretty transparent about that when, you know, you go back and you look at some of the interviews. But I think we're trying to do something different. Like, I don't think it is helpful or productive to simply be like the left-wing version of right-wing talk radio. Right. We're not trying to divide the world into two camps. I think that's really the problem with much of what our current political discourse situation is. And so if you're going to call us a counterpoint to right-wing talk radio, it's a counterpoint in the sense that we're not utilizing the same strategies, not that we're having sort of the opposite content. We're not trying to drive people apart and get them riled up. We're trying to come at them with, you know, real news that's based on fact and sort of an objective reality, right? And then a thoughtful conversation about what the implications of that are. And we come at that conversation from a framing of being supportive of democratic institutions, of a government that is representative of the people. And often that puts us at odds with many politicians on the right because they don't seem to be, in many cases, share those same values, but that's our responsibility. Like at the end of the day, we want to take a local first strategy where we're focusing on what matters in local communities. And when we talk about national issues, whenever possible, we try to tie that back to a local context so that it's clear how that affects their everyday lives.
This seems to be the unique value or position of civic media compared to, for instance, Air America or other progressive radio offerings that are out there still, because this emphasis on local community radio, on finding people to be hosts who are deeply rooted in their communities, who know the traditions of the not only the state of Wisconsin, but of their local area. Why is that so important?
I think there are a couple of reasons. One is that we've seen sort of a decades-long decline in local media, where we've lost local newspapers. Consolidation in the radio and television industries has left a lot of local stations gutted. And so in many cases, people can't find good local voices. And as a result, their attention has shifted to national news sources. And when you're just watching Foxes or CNNs of the world, you're hearing about things that are happening far away. You're powerless to do anything about it. And the news that's being reported are things that are, you know, thousands of miles away. And your only connection to those things is filtered through the bias of whatever media you're consuming. So it's sort of a recipe for sort of putting people in a different reality, depending on what type of media sources they're looking at. In contrast, if you are consuming local media, then these are things that are happening in your own community. They have a direct impact on your life. You often know the people involved, or you're involved in, you know, you work for the plant in town or whatever it is. And the issues that come up don't usually fall into clear partisan buckets. And so it's less divisive and the stakes are higher because these are things that have a real impact on your life. And it's the same thing in the political realm, like the local races. You know, who's mayor and who your state representatives are tend to have a larger impact on your day-to-day life than who's in the White House.
We now have a government of, by, and for the billionaires. I mean, there are a dozen billionaires that Trump has appointed already. What's your reaction to all that?
It's terrifying. And I think the challenge is there is going to be so much crazy happening, and it's going to be sort of legitimately outrageous. And will be very easy to spend all of our time being outraged about all the things that are happening. But from my perspective, it's all a sideshow from the actual problem, which in my mind is the distribution of wealth and the capture of federal power by the ultra rich, and the fact that they're getting richer. And until we address, you know, the inequities in the tax code and wage laws and get the money out of politics, then our government is going to be run by the rich and not by the people. We have to not lose sight of what is happening with the money, even when it's terrible.
But it's kind of a chicken and egg problem, though. If you don't have the money, you can't win a lot of elections. And the people who've got the money win the elections. They write the laws. They distort the tax code to help themselves. And that's the problem with Citizens United and money in politics, too, which is a hill that I've been climbing and slipping down and climbing again time and time again for the last
18
years. So, I mean, it is about power and gaining power at some point so that we can redress these injustices. But I got to think that what you're trying to do in the media landscape is one opportunity we have to try to educate and inform our fellow citizens and try to be with them as we try to regain some power. And I'm just wondering if you see going forward civic media as a model for other states. I was talking with Lou Friedland at the UW. He thinks it's a potential national model that other folks could do in their own state with this emphasis on local.
I would like to think so. But I think there's a lot of subtlety in getting it right. I mean, even in this conversation, it's very easy to fall in the trap of describing civic media as progressive media. And I think that's dangerous because I don't think that's what it is. Certainly many of the voices have progressive views, but I think the way to think about it is reframing our values in sort of the core values that I would think that most Americans support, which is a government of, by, and for the people that isn't controlled by the moneyed elite. And I think when you sort of build our strategy from the ground up based on those principles, where we're focusing on local issues and making government more transparent, more responsive, then there is potential to build a much broader audience and support for common sense reforms. And so our challenge is to talk about the issues that matter to people, like being able to afford groceries and take care of their children and have a public school that will provide their kids with a quality education, and a government that isn't telling people what to do with their bodies, then I think we can sort of rebuild support for these common sense reforms in a way that isn't so tribal and divisive. But it's a challenge.
Well, Sage Weil, CEO of Civic Media, thanks for being with me.
Yeah, good to be here.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Wisconsin Forward Podcast. I'm Matt Rothschild. We'll be back with another podcast on the role of school choice in Wisconsin and what it's done to our public education system. You won't want to miss that one.